was sort of unwilling to enjoy the fruits of our labor in terms of this bustling pregnancy loss community unless we're going to include terminating for medical reasons. It doesn't seem right. And, you know, I see termination as a woman's right. And we don't need to debate how badly she wanted this pregnancy.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Hayley Manning.
And I'm Catherine Mousley. We're shortly going to be joined by Dr. Jessica Zucker. Jessica is a psychologist, writer and author who has specialised in reproductive and maternal mental health for many years. She started the I Had a Miscarriage campaign after experiencing her own late miscarriage and has just released a memoir of the same title.
Yeah, so I've just finished reading Jessica's book, which I really enjoyed. And I was really relieved to read it as well, because she very, very clearly includes termination for medical reasons in her book. It's there in the introduction when she's listing out the different types. And then what I also really liked about the book was that, yes, it's a memoir about her story, but because of the work that she does, she's integrating other people's experiences of baby loss. And with that, she includes TFMR, and not just one story of TFMR or one character with TFMR. Three different characters come in with TFMR as their baby loss story. And it was this idea that she's really including TFMR as something that should be recognized, that is part of the baby loss world. So I wondered, Catherine, what's your experience of being welcomed or not welcomed in the baby loss community?
I don't think I ever didn't feel welcomed. I remember feeling on the sidelines, but it wasn't like a feeling of exclusion. It was like an outside looking in thinking, hey, what have we got here? And I think that's one of the reasons why I was so public about my story, because I could see so many other people feeling excluded and feeling left out, that I thought, well, you know, someone needs to go in there and like gate crash this party of the baby loss people. So I kind of didn't have an invite. I just went anyway.
Yeah.
I think being so blunt and being so open and being so public has created a new path. Because I think there's obviously, once you create a new path, other people follow on behind you. So there was never a sense of feeling excluded, because I felt very headstrong in what I wanted to achieve by being public and talking about this.
Yeah. And nobody ever said to you, go on, get out of here. Once you were there, nobody said you don't belong here.
No.
I think I've had a similar experience. I mean, I was very wary of any groups, either face to face or on social media. And when Luna died, I wasn't actually on social media. So it wasn't something that I would suddenly announce on Facebook or Instagram. So I was very tentative, but a bit like you, Catherine, it's like once I got to social media is where I got into, actually I felt very welcome, and I found other people talking about their stories, including you, and then that gave me some confidence. I mean, I've had miscarriages as well, so I've sort of said this before, that I feel like I've maybe kind of, Luna was always a part of the story. I never didn't not talk about her, but I guess maybe because I've had the miscarriages, that gave me a little bit of, you know, I can talk about that too.
Did you feel that was more acceptable though?
Yeah, definitely.
You could go in there and say, oh, I've had this miscarriage, and then you could talk about the TFMR. It wasn't like TFMR straight away, because, you know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know if I've ever consciously thought of it like that, but I think definitely miscarriage, because, you know, you go, oh, miscarriage, yes, that's very tragic. TFMR, everybody kind of slightly freaks out a little bit. If they haven't been through it themselves, they slightly freak out about it.
Do you think it's the way that you, or I would view it, like some people, if they're experiencing other people's opinions or the way they're influenced by what people say, they think of it as linked to abortion, because that's what most of people still think it is. But if you view it of, you know, you're clear in why you did it, you're starting to accept why you did it, you know, you're beginning that process of understanding why, what happened. So you view it in a completely different way, which makes it easier to talk about. Therefore, like, you don't feel that exclusion because you're not afraid of people.
Yeah. And I love my daughter. Yeah. You know, there's no question about it. But I also think that, you know, as far as the abortion question around it. Yes, that's definitely a part of it, but you're always going to have people who are anti-abortion. Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested in really talking to those people. I'm not going to change their mind. It won't matter what my reasons are. It's never going to get anywhere with them. But I think the vast majority of people are probably just unsure of what exactly it means and how to talk about it and what to say.
It's that understanding, isn't it? Again,
yeah.
Understanding and creating awareness and education.
Yeah. And if we're not talking about it, then nobody's going to get exactly anywhere, really. So that feels like a good place to bring Jessica in because she is very clearly talking about it. Thank you, Jessica, for joining us. It's really, really great to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for the important conversation you've started.
Yeah. Well, you know, your book, like I said, you know, you started the I Had a Miscarriage campaign. You've written in countless newspapers and magazines about baby loss, not just miscarriage. TFMR you've written about.
Yeah.
It's very rare, actually.
Yeah.
Handful of books.
Exactly. Or a handful of newspaper articles. I don't know how many newspaper articles actually openly have talked about TFMR. But, you know, it feels like it's a real choice for you to be inclusive. Would that be safe to say that it's a conscious choice?
Well, thank you so much for acknowledging that. Yes, I think that I am a little bit concerned and confused about the pregnancy loss community at large. When I do post on my page about terminating for medical reasons, I have been lambasted by countless people who, you know, tell me if you're not for the babies, who is? Letting me know they're unfollowing me, letting me know that they think that it's inappropriate, you know, for me to take on this topic, which honestly just gave me all the more passion around it. And I said, sayonara.
You fit in well with us, actually. That's how we are, aren't we?
It's how we roll.
Yeah. I don't need you following me if you, think that way. So I attempt in a lot of my posts, though, that do include terminating for medical reasons, I really try to encourage people to sort of embody a radical notion of empathy. So as you know, I'm a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I specialize in women's reproductive and maternal mental health, and I've done so for about 15 years at this point. So I specialized in this field long before experiencing a second trimester miscarriage firsthand. Mm-hmm. And I find it kind of quizzical and troubling that people don't immediately include terminating for medical reasons in this beautiful community that we've all created. And so I'm inviting people who don't get it by saying, put yourself in her shoes. Unless you've been in her shoes, you haven't.
Yeah.
So when you judge, it reflects something very important about you. Mm. and I get, you know, we are riding this really important line of the politicization of pregnancy loss, of women's bodies more generally, of abortion. I get it. But I am sort of unwilling to just enjoy the fruits of our labor in terms of this bustling pregnancy loss community unless we're going to include terminating for medical reasons. It just doesn't seem right. And, you know, I see termination as a woman's right. And we don't need to get into a debate. And we can, but we don't need to debate how badly she wanted this pregnancy. So too many people wrote in when I'm talking about Roe versus Wade and the importance of choice. You know, people will write in, well, I would have done anything for my baby. Why wouldn't she? Or, you know, I wanted this baby more than anything. Clearly she didn't. Now, as you said earlier, is it worth engaging these people who simply don't understand the complexity, the nuance? Probably not. But I feel like as a psychologist, I at least want to see what I can do to inch closer toward this sort of radical notion of compassion and empathy that we are so lacking in the world more generally, but of course, specifically around this topic.
I think your mission is very similar to how we wanted to work with this podcast. Again, it feels like baffling. We have to keep explaining it, but you know, we want to provide that understanding and that knowledge. So to create that empathy and compassion, which is exactly what you're doing as well. And then, you know, people will start to accept it and understand it and stop fearing it for some reason. And I think it's that stigma, isn't it? That's been built up over years and years and years. And then, you know, you can't get rid of that as easily. But
my thinking too. It's like, maybe they won't understand it. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't accept it, but we're going to keep talking about it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if somebody bought the book and doesn't like that it's in there, then throw out my book. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to engage in this hierarchical thinking, in this sort of binary thinking about what loss is and what it's not, and what grief is and what it's not. And I'm not going to allow people to engage in this sort of comparing and contrasting pain. Mm-hmm. Just because somebody, quote unquote, chose to terminate a pregnancy doesn't mean they are not in the most excruciating pain of their life. Of course they are. If they wanted this pregnancy and something is wrong with the baby and they are having to choose on behalf of this child's life, that to me is love.
Exactly. And a loss is a loss at any stage. And it doesn't matter whether the baby was stillborn, it was a late miscarriage, an early miscarriage, a termination, that baby is still wanted. I heard people say, you know, oh, you know, it must be worse because your baby was stillborn at a certain gestation, and it doesn't make it any less hard to deal with if your baby was 8 weeks or 38 weeks. It's exactly the same.
I've heard it, what I've heard somewhere along in the ether of, you know, this thing about comparison of grief. It's really toxic and it really doesn't help anyone. It certainly doesn't help you with your grief. Or, you know, whether you're the person judging the other person on their grief, it doesn't help anybody in this. But one of the things I heard about that was this sort of reframing it as they are going through the most painful thing that they ever have in their lives, in their existence.
Yes.
You are going through the most painful thing that you have ever experienced in your life. You're both experiencing the most pain in your experiences. It's a very much a personal and an internal thing.
That's right.
And you cannot compare those two things. I would even go so far that I've had multiple types of losses and grieving and griefs in my life. And I am loath to even compare those to each other.
Why should we?
Yeah.
They're all distinct.
Completely separate.
They're separate and they're distinct and they're also married to each other. Like
It's very complicated.
Yeah. And I think that we get caught because there is this, what I talk about in the book, this kind of swirling trifecta of silence, stigma, and shame. Mm-hmm. We get caught in the comparing. Oh, well, it could have been worse. Oh, well, mine was the worst. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, how can you complain about yours? Mine was so, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one wants to be the one highest on the mountaintop.
I win.
Yeah, I have the most grief of all. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
But it's because of, I think, the patriarchal notion of having to sort of justify and earn our pain, particularly when it comes to terminating for medical reasons. Because all too often in the context of my office, patients tell me that they have told their friends and family that they miscarried.
Yeah.
Why? Because they are trying to spare themselves the judgment that all too often shrouds the topic of termination. And we get into that. I have no judgment about how they want to share it, but I want them to share it from a place of dignity and their own version of honesty. So if it protects them from other people's stupidity or ignorance, do that. But if it's because you are so afraid that maybe you did something wrong, we need to investigate that. And that's my biggest fear around this topic too. It's like women are walking around with guilt.
Yeah.
And I so badly, before I die, want to, you know, ensure that no woman feels a sense of self-blame, shame or guilt in the aftermath of baby loss.
Because it's
out of our control, right?
Yeah.
And I think, to be honest, like when you think about the spectrum of losses, a chemical pregnancy, a first trimester loss, a second trimester loss, a stillbirth, terminating for medical reasons is in a way the most kind of debilitating with regard to this quote unquote choice.
Yeah.
And so you live with this notion or this idea that, oh, I chose.
Yeah.
Did you choose?
Like, yeah.
So, you know, and that's
back to that word again, isn't it?
Yeah. I got into that in that article I wrote for InStyle because it's like when we put it that way, that's where it becomes politicized.
Yeah.
Well, you chose. I didn't choose. My baby fell out while I was home. You went in and you went under and you pulled the baby out.
Yeah.
You know, but having to deliberate about terminating is so wildly intense and painstaking. And I think that's where the sort of this radical notion of compassion and empathy needs to surface.
I find it really interesting that we all kind of work in the field of mental health, or you soon will be soon, Hayley.
Yeah.
And that how we're going about trying to create this empathy and compassion and get rid of that word choice as well and eradicate the guilt.
Yeah. But yeah. We've talked about before in previous podcasts that there really is, I mean, whatever, you're being presented with different options and all the options are shit.
With a capital S.
Capital S, like full capital, yep. The whole word, shit. But the you're presented with these options, but I think that the thing with the word choice, that people who have not been through it, they hear that and they sort of think that maybe one of those options was good and you just didn't choose it. Or there was one that was less bad or less shit and you didn't choose that one, you know, but they're all shit.
Yeah.
There's no good option here. There's no good outcome here.
I always say that you didn't choose the diagnosis though.
No.
You know, that happened. You didn't ask for that to happen. So you had no choice at the end of the day.
Yeah. And then as soon as you get the diagnosis, you find out there's a problem. It could be maternal health reasons as well. Let's also include them here as well. You know, you're very ill and you're being told, right, if we don't terminate your pregnancy, you're going to die.
Yes.
Or we're going to, you know, you're going to start taking medication and that's going to kill your baby.
Yeah.
So,
or even,
you know,
the physical effects of pregnancy. Yeah. Like we've had people with HG, haven't we?
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly. So, you know, these are all things that are possible to happen, but unless you have been through it, unless you've been the person faced with it, you have no idea what trauma that unleashes as soon as you are facing that issue.
And the word choice is like, you just wake up one morning going, right, I'm going to decide to terminate my own pregnancy. But it's rarely ever, well, of course, it's never ever like that at all.
No.
There's always something that led to making that decision that you probably didn't have a choice in at all.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you've seen this. So I had, as I said, a second trimester miscarriage while I was home by myself. I started spotting 2 days earlier, went straight to my doctor. Everything looked perfect. And then that Thursday morning in October, the blood changed in hue and intensity. My husband took my son to preschool, and there I was alone in my home. And I went to the bathroom to try to like calm my body down because I was feeling so overwhelmed and overwrought. And then the baby fell out. So 2 weeks later, I was supposed to go to my scheduled amniocentesis. And then from there, I would have learned about the chromosomal abnormality that my daughter had, that I did end up learning about because we brought the baby in for testing. Mm-hmm. So the chromosomal abnormality that my daughter had was not life-threatening. Mm. And I would have terminated the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And maybe I should say that again. This was not a life-threatening diagnosis, and I still would have terminated the pregnancy. So I think that what I'm trying to illuminate here and get into is like this way in which also I think there's subtle judgment around people having to say like it was a fatal
Yes. You
know? Yeah, we've talked about that quite a lot, haven't we? we're flying the flag for non-fatal in this corner.
Right. And so it's like, well, wait a second. Like, how are we even determining what that means? And
exactly.
What does the doctor really say? Because how much do they really know?
Exactly.
They could say, well, the baby could be born safely and die within the first 2 years. Is that fatal?
Yeah.
Because some people would opt to have that baby and have it there for 2 years. Other people would look inward and say, what can we handle? What is best for my mental health? What is best for this baby's life? Whatever. So there's so many ways in which we have to scan our lives and our capacities. And I think that's okay.
Yes.
You know, like my husband and I have talked about, we would not have felt we could take on a life with a healthy child we already had, and then a child with chromosomal abnormalities, given what the doctor speculated could be the situation. Yeah.
I remember my ex-partner, and his predominant concern was that I would never work again because I would be constantly caring for our son. And whereas I think I was more emotional led, he was very practical about, you know, how it would affect our relationship. Where would we live? Where would he go to school? That kind of thing. All these little things that are perhaps considered selfish for even thinking of when it should be focused on the baby, people think. But when you're actually making this decision, you know, all these things come into play that you perhaps don't feel that you can say to other people without, again, judgment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a complicated issue. It affects everything, and it cannot be boiled down to this one single choice, yes or no. It's so nuanced,
and it's not binary, good or bad.
Exactly. There is no right or wrong. I mean, you mentioned there that somebody might opt to have that baby and it lives for however long it lives, and they have their time, and that's okay. Yes. And the other person may choose to terminate that pregnancy. That's okay. You know, there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. And you know, we have to make the best decisions for ourselves in the situation with the information that we have, with the background that we come to it with as well.
And often quite quickly, I think.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, quite quickly.
You've only got a few days to decide all of your entire life.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, with very, very little information, some people have.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it does have to be fast. Sometimes you can take your time. But I think also the time thing depends on where you live and the rules that are around that. And also, I think the support that you're getting, about whether you feel like you're getting the support from the doctors and midwives and anybody else you might be having in part of that team.
Especially if you don't know.
Yeah.
Like if you have never been through this before, you don't know about anything.
Exactly.
You're sleepwalking through it.
Yeah. You're really relying on those professionals, aren't you?
Yeah.
And if you don't have good ones, you're a bit lost, really.
And ours was very fast. And then, you know, we didn't have any information and there was no support at all. So I think, you know, I can't be the only person that is in that situation. Other people must be similar.
I don't think you are.
Then you arrive at this point thinking, what the hell have I done afterwards? Because, you know, you're in such a traumatic situation, you don't think, I need to go and do this research, or I need to go and look at this first, or you just rely on others to guide you. And if their guidance is solely, you know, we think you should have a termination, that's sometimes what people do head for, because they think it's best and they trust the people that are telling them that information.
Mm. Right. And so that kind of brings me to this idea of, like, how do we help people come to terms with this? Mm. And I was about to say with this choice or with this decision, but you know, it's no amount of feeling guilty or going over and over and over this in one's mind in the subsequent days, months, or years will bring the baby back. So I try to help my patients with this sort of, like, you made the best decision you knew you could make for you, your baby, your family. But I think, again, it's the politicization of this topic that then scurries around in one's mind in the recesses of, you know.
Yeah. In those dark times, in that deep dark of night when you're lying awake staring at the ceiling.
Yes.
Yeah.
But why? Why? I think it's because we have deemed termination negative, that it's bad, that you're somehow not a good person or something if this is the route you took. Or you start to question, well, what if the doctor was wrong? Well, how do I know? Why do we do that?
Yeah.
Self-punishment maybe as well.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Because we believe it's wrong.
We want someone to blame for it. I think there is a kind of like, we need meaning. Like this happened, there's somebody to blame.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, I can't find somebody else. It'll be me.
I know. But the thing is, I think that we engage in self-blame as a way to try to harness control where we have none.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
I think it's a sincere attempt at staving off grief. Because when we go over and over in our minds at night, what if, 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 I think if we had the tools to say, hold on, what am I actually feeling under these questions?
Yeah.
I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel despondent. I feel what? So I think that we are afraid to lean into the grief and instead we hurl these self-blaming judgments on ourselves, and we engage then in this cultural problem.
It's a bit like a form of self-harm, isn't it? Because, you know, a lot of people who don't want to feel feelings use other coping mechanisms, sometimes unhealthy, whereas this is an emotional form of self-harm where we'll just torture ourselves constantly because we believe that, you know, we're at fault because it's just too much to feel that grief and that sadness at 2 a.m. when you're alone.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with all these feelings?
Yeah.
Oh, you can come and listen to us, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Come That's and listen to the podcast. Yeah. At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Anytime, we're here 24 hours.
Yeah, we don't go off air. You just download. We're there. Jessica, I wanted to sort of go back to your, you know, so you've had this experience, late miscarriage, and you say in the book that it changed how you approached your work.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think any of us can go through this, any baby loss form, and it not change us, but it changed your work. And because you were already working in this field, do you want to just tell us a little bit about that, about how it changed your approach?
Sure. Well, long story short, I think that the fact that I had been sitting across from people, hearing about the isolation, the alienation, the self-blame, the guilt, the shame, and, you know, all the while, you know, being as empathic and attentive and attuned as I could be, I had not lived this. So there's really only so much we can understand when it's theoretical, right? And I'm not in any way saying that I have to have lived through everything my patients have lived through to be a great therapist for them or to be a solid sounding board. But when I returned to my office hollow, just days after losing a 16-week pregnancy, I understood them in a whole new realm, unfortunately and fortunately.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, ablaze. My hormones were just woo, going everywhere, right? I was bleeding. My milk came in. I had no information yet about why this occurred. And I was enduring, during this kind of hormonal haze, all of those initial statements that people say, oh, at least, you know, you can get pregnant. You could just go on and get pregnant again. Oh, at least you have a healthy son. Oh, well, Jessica, aren't you relieved? Cause like, I mean, you were ambivalent about having a second child anyway. What are you
doing? I hate it when people say these things. Just every time I hear someone else who receives these comments, this makes me even more frustrated.
Oh, it's like, I mean, for me, I felt so porous, so raw in the aftermath of my loss. And that went on for a while. And so any of these comments really added insult to injury. Felt like people were like literally pouring salt in these like gaping wounds, you know? So I returned to work. I probably should have taken more time off. I'm pretty transparent about that in my book. It's sort of like, I went back to work because I feel this kind of loyalty to my patients. I absolutely love the work I do. I didn't want to stay away so long that they actually started to worry about me and my mental health because they were there for themselves. I didn't want to become, you know, the focus of their lives, of course. And sometimes in the midst of trauma, all we want to do is race back to some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah. Like an anchor, yeah.
Yeah, like claw our way back to like the world we knew. So anyway, I mean, again, it's too hard to say whether or not I should have or shouldn't have returned to work. I did return to work and I did the best I could. And, you know, the truth is at this point, you know, my loss was 8 years ago. I have inevitably become a better or more sort of nuanced therapist as a result of my experience. And, you know, some patients left and others felt so relieved that now I actually understood them from the inside out.
Can I ask why some left?
I had some people leave because, you know, I think, and I don't know what it's like where you live, but I think in general, you know, with doctors, medical doctors, and I do think this applies sometimes to therapists as well. I think people thought or hoped that I was untouchable. Like we kind of immortalize. So I think people thought like, wait, you, my therapist, you lost a pregnancy while home alone and then had to undergo an unmedicated DNC and bring your baby to your doctor's office in a plastic bag. Like, and people said this out loud. If this could happen to you, does it mean it could happen to me? Or people said, did this happen to you because it happened to me? So there was a lot of magical thinking that came into my office, right? Like this idea that loss can be contagious.
Yeah.
And I think astutely, some people were like, if you're navigating your own grief, can you really be there for mine?
Yeah. It's almost like people think those who work in mental health don't have their own mental health issues, or you expect a dentist to have the most perfect teeth, or a doctor's never going to be ill. Yeah.
They've got all their shit together. And then, and then you find out they're human.
Right.
Yeah.
You drive by a hospital and you see nurses and doctors smoking outside.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting point because so if I had lost the pregnancy, let's say at 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, no one would have known. It was because I was as far along as I was, and I have like a small frame. My patients knew I was pregnant. And so that kind of brings up this notion, like how much of the therapist can come into the consultation room. And I could be struggling with an eating disorder, alcoholism, drugs, going through a divorce, and none of my patients would know. But that's the thing, because pregnancy is so, you know, visible, and there's this sort of other being that enters the room, my patients were invited into my life in a whole new way that I could not, you know, ignore.
Yeah, and you can't keep the boundaries as easily.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jessica, I wanted to sort of just go back a little bit to, you know, you had said that, yes, you had a late miscarriage at 16 weeks, you were alone at home, bleeding, and then baby fell out. And you also said that you were scheduled for an amnio at 18 weeks. You later subsequently found out, yes, there was a chromosomal issue with your baby and you would have terminated. And it just brought up such an interesting perspective for me and for Catherine. For me, I was told, you know, when we found out that Luna was poorly, we went to see the consultant. Every time I had a scan and I saw this consultant every 2 weeks up until we terminated, I was being told, I think you'll miscarry. And so when I found this out about you, because I thought when I was being told, I think you'll miscarry, I did. I thought, well, can we get on with it, please? Because I don't want to make this choice again. And I just don't want to have to do that. And in the end, of course, I did make that decision. Now, what does that mean for you? You know, you find out and you subsequently look back and say, well, I would have terminated. You know what? Let's discuss that. I want to discuss that.
Yeah. I mean, and I can say very honestly that in a way, I feel a sense of relief. that I didn't have to make that quote unquote choice.
Yeah.
Because of the way in which our society thinks about the pain and grief of pregnancy loss. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like I'm allowed, like people are like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, you're
that's lost. Tragic.
Like a documentary. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Had I said, oh, we learned at the amnio, you know, that the baby would have had some educational issues, that she wouldn't have been able to get pregnant, that she could be this or that, you know, the range of things that the doctor shared with us about the news. I don't know. Would I have been able to write this book? Would I have been able to start this community? Mm-hmm. Would people have the same level of openness to me, my story, my perspectives? Mm-hmm. Now, I would hope they would, and I know myself well enough to know that I would have done something major with this topic regardless, because that's who I am. But would it have been a quote unquote easier, less bodily traumatic mm-hmm. experience? Maybe. The fact that the baby fell out, and luckily I'm close with my OBGYN, so I texted her. She called me. She walked me through what to do. So I had to shuffle over in my bathroom, holding the baby between my legs, because she was, you know, the umbilical cord had us connected. I had to get scissors that previously had only been used for my eyebrows to cut the cord.
Yeah.
That is profound.
Yeah.
To play doctor alone. And, you know, the shriek that came from me when she fell out was unlike anything I've ever heard come from me or my body before.
You've given me goosebumps.
Oh, I mean, as I wrote in the book, it's like I thought the windows of my home would shatter, and they didn't. I did. So, upon cutting the umbilical cord, placing this baby, my baby, on a hand towel next to me, I promptly began to hemorrhage, which my doctor told me would happen because until the placenta comes out, you just bleed and bleed and bleed and bleed and bleed. And I just kept flushing the toilet, flushing the toilet. Mm-hmm. I was like, how am I going to get to your office? My husband, of course, came home as quickly as possible. We brought the baby in a bag. I put on pants. I shoved like three towels down my pants, which like I had to walk down the street like this, by the way, with the bag, with my baby. And we drove to her office. I don't think we said a word because I was stunned, you know, speechless. There were no words. So we get to her office and then my doctor says, well, you know, you're going to have to take your pants off. Cause I just like, I couldn't move.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think I can because I'm bleeding so much. And she was like, well, we can cut them off if you want to. I'm like, well, I'll have nothing to get home in. So I took my pants off and a boulder size clot spilled all over the floor. And I hope I did a good enough job in the book describing.
You did.
This murder.
You did a very good job. Yes.
Woo! I mean, like, so to the point where it was splattered all over. And we hoped that that was the placenta, but it wasn't. That was just the blood loss going from my house to her office.
Yeah.
Then it was sort of like this. I was presented with the quote unquote choice. Should we do the DNC now unmedicated? Or do you want to wait for anesthesiology? Could take up to an hour. And then you will probably have to have a blood transfusion based on the amount of loss. And so in this crazy mixed up, traumatic, dramatic moment, I had to evaluate somehow what I wanted to do. Okay, so how long will the DNC take? How painful is it? How do we know that that will be effective enough? Will I have to get a blood transfusion anyway? And so right then and there, I made the decision, you know what? This day couldn't get more painful physically or emotionally. Let's just fucking do it. Just get it done. I was more afraid to have a transfusion than I was to just have the pain and the pull of placenta. So the reason I'm sharing all of these details is because Yes, right? Like, how do we determine what would have been a quote easier route to losing this pregnancy, right? It's like, come on. So I've never really thought of it that way. Like, wow, it would have just been sort of a cleaner process to find out something was wrong, schedule the appointment, go under, wake up no longer pregnant.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah. And so both Catherine's and I, our experience is labor and delivery. So I was 19 weeks. Catherine, how many weeks were you?
17.
17. So we're similar. We're all in the similar gestational realm here, the three of us. We both had labor and delivery. So we were induced and I had a quite calm experience. Catherine was on a gynecology ward.
And yeah, I was empathizing with something you, when you say you had to cut the cord, I actually caught my son in my hands, still in his sack. And I was then screaming that he was still alive because I was feeling him move, but that was just the water he was in.
Yeah.
And my partner at the time was actually like, don't look down, because again, it was like a murder scene.
Yeah.
So,
with Luna.
And that was in a hospital. So,
I mean, my waters broke. I went into labor, my waters broke. Some contractions. She came halfway out. And then she was sort of hanging out of me for a few minutes. I've never really told anybody about this, actually. I've never really said this, but she was just sort of hanging out of me. And I was on the floor in the room. And the midwife said to me, let's try and get you up onto the bed. And then, you know, let's try and get her out from there. But I say this, but I wasn't panicking. I was just sort of in this labor zone. And actually, I had a sense of, I really want to meet her.
Yes.
So there is this, I don't know if Catherine, did you have any of that kind of feeling with Bud? Like that you had a sense that you wanted to meet him?
That was always the option. I mean, I think it was just such a dramatic entrance. Yeah. And then he got whisked away. But then they did bring him back and he was obviously cleaned up and in a little box and things. So.
Yeah. And was there this sort of sense of you wanting to meet him?
Oh,
was there
God, definitely. Like, I don't think I would have been able to live myself if I hadn't seen him. It was always something I was going to do.
So that's what's really interesting to me, is that you've had this experience at home alone, traumatic. You know, this is not planned at all. Catherine and I, we made a decision. And then again, I'm doing inverted commas for the listeners. I'm doing inverted commas.
Yes.
And we went through a process of inducing labor and having a delivery. And I'm just really interested in that whole idea of, okay, I was going, please, can I just miscarry? And then I hear your story and I'm like, oh, actually, maybe I've kind of got through. You know,
well, it's interesting though, because so here people go in, they go under, the fetal heartbeat is stopped, and then they induce, you know, and they basically do, you know, the termination, the abortion. I mean, if it's a lot later, then it's called a DNE. If it's earlier, it's a DNC. And so I do not have any patients, unless, of course, it's a stillbirth and they do, you know, give birth. All my patients who have terminated upon learning something is wrong, sort of between that 12 and 20 week mark, they are completely out.
Right.
And they don't have the opportunity like the two of you had to sort of meet the baby.
It's baffling, isn't it? Because we're not allowed that over 14 weeks here. It has to be labor and delivery.
If it's in a hospital, if you want to go to an abortion clinic, then you can have a surgical termination.
Oh, I see.
But not in the hospital.
Okay.
Which is another whole other story. Mm. That's a whole other conversation.
That is.
So people can choose that, and people do choose that, but they have to go to an abortion clinic.
Which again feeds into that stigma.
It's a whole other thing. But for the most part, yes, you will have a labor and delivery. You'll be conscious.
The thing that I feel like I, you know, in retrospect, value about my experience is that in a way, like I had this home birth experience, not when I wanted, not when I planned, not when I ever in my life thought I would, you know, undergo. And even though the trauma and the panic were above a 10, I look back and like, there's almost some poetry in the whole thing, like that I got to be alone with her. Because again, here, if I had terminated, she would have just come out in pieces and like they wouldn't have offered me anything. I wouldn't have actually seen her. So it's like, how does one decide or determine what would have been less horrifying? It's all bad. It's all difficult.
We go back
it's
to the label, all shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Capital letters.
It's just like, oh God, you know, it's too hard to know.
But I really think it's interesting to look at these different experiences, you know, to, as you, your phrase, but sort of being radically inquisitive and curious to really try to get into the bones of what somebody has experienced. And if you are in the loss world, you have experienced your own loss, then we can start to go, ah, okay, I'm hearing you say this. I hadn't really thought about my loss in terms of that, because that's what hearing your story made me really think about, was that I just wanted a miscarriage. And then I sort of hear this and I go, actually, it sort of helps me reframe a little bit and kind of go, I had a really lovely birth with Luna and I'm very grateful.
I love hearing that. That's so beautiful.
And then we get, we've got charities that bring around like memory boxes for babies now. And there's obviously for most hospitals have photographers, someone to do hand and footprints, that kind of thing. So I think I feel very lucky that we are also in that position that people do that.
And that's the thing that I completely missed out on. Yeah. I have nothing to prove or to show of my girl. A friend who's a midwife stopped by my doctor's office when I told her what was happening, and she did take pictures. I don't have those pictures anymore. That's a whole other story. But yes, because I was 16 weeks, and because here, unless you're 20 weeks and over, you know, it wasn't deemed a stillbirth, obviously. And so I wasn't offered, you know, a lock of hair, a footprint, a handprint, no memory box, no ashes, or, you know, any way of sort of memorializing. And I envy people who get that now.
Do you think it feels a bit more closure in a way, that in fact you did get to see her? Because you wouldn't, you know, if you'd gone in for termination, you probably wouldn't have had that option.
Yes, I think for a long time, though, seeing her, you know, also haunted me, not because of like what she looked like, but well, I felt she looked so much like her brother. And my pregnancy that came after my daughter, who's now 7, does not look anything like her brother. And somehow that was really disturbing for me.
Felt quite sad all of a sudden, you saying that.
Yeah,
something.
It was just like she was so possible. And, you know, obviously at 16 weeks, they can't live, you know, outside of your body. But it was like she was definitely bigger than I would have expected. And
they looked like a real baby. Like, you know, it's just like a miniature version of a full size baby, which I think is a lot of people do feel quite shocked by that as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel quite moved by that last bit that you've, I feel quite moved by everything that you've said, but that bit you've just talked about how she looked like your son. And and I guess, how have you incorporated your daughter into the family? Because again, in the book, your children, your living children know about her.
Yes. So we don't celebrate, you know, Christmas and these kinds of holidays. We are culturally Jewish. And so, you know, because I see so much on Instagram around Christmas time, people having stockings with the name and ornaments with the name. I don't do that. But my children know what I specialize in. They know that October is my month. They know that October 15th is the day that mommy is unavailable.
fully engaged. Don't speak to me. I'm busy.
Exactly. They know, I mean, they may not know, but they know that on the anniversary of my loss, which is 10, 11, 12, that I do some things. And it's more that we talk openly about miscarriage and how that affects women and families. And my daughter knows that she came after that now. She knows that not all pregnancies make it. And for me, that is so important. That is the cultural change we need. If kids understand that not all pregnancies make it, we will not be so surprised when we lose pregnancies. Now, we'll still be heartbroken, but it's because we don't grow up with the education around these things. And so I don't, you know, it's, I did give my daughter a name eventually. Her name is Olive, because my son had always talked about wanting a sister named Olive. And then I love the significance and the meaning of the name Olive, which I get into in the book. But I don't actively do Olive-related things in my life. That's just not sort of me. But I feel like my work and this hashtag movement and the book are all Olive, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like I have her name sort of all over my house, and I don't have photos, unfortunately. So I would say she's more sort of sewn into the fabric of our lives, but not in this kind of explicit way. Sometimes I've thought about, you know, a tattoo. I've thought about these things that people do to memorialize it, but my son is 12, so I don't think I should get another tattoo.
Don't I encourage him? A little too close to teenage years yet.
Yeah. But I like the, I wish that we had planted a tree, and it's never too late.
No, it isn't. You'll find something. Like I've just moved house, and I've just been painting a bookcase, and the handles are now daisies, which is the flower of my son's birth month. And I see feathers everywhere. So I've changed another handle to a feather, and it's all these little things I think I incorporate into the house that are for him rather than being some massive grand gesture.
Oh, I love that so much. That's inspiring.
Thank you. Yeah, it's lovely.
Thank you for sharing, Jessica. It's been an absolutely enriching conversation once again. Sometimes I feel a bit in awe of all the guests we have on and just their stories and what we talk about as well. So we do have a TFMR takeaway, which is a question we like to ask all of our guests. And the question is, what advice or piece of hope would you give to women and families who are facing a TFMR or have undergone a TFMR?
Well, I think it might sound cliche or overly simplistic, but I just want to say, please do not blame yourself, and please opt to remember that you're doing the best that you can, you know, that you made a decision out of love. That's my short answer.
Short and simple and sweet.
Good answer.
Because I know I've talked on too long.
No, it's been really wonderful listening to you and having your perspective. And I think the listeners are really going to enjoy this. So yes, thank you, Jessica, for joining us. And we will put into the episode notes where they can follow you. But your hashtag on Instagram is I had a miscarriage. And we will also put into the episode notes where they can get your book from. But yeah, it's been so, so great to speak to you. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. And thank you so much for the awareness you're bringing to this important topic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for choosing this to listen to today, and we hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know your thoughts. You can message us over on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Times Talk TFMR.
And don't forget that you can subscribe to our podcast from Podbean or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And it's a great way to make sure that you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're published. So that's it for this time. Thank you. And please take gentle care of yourselves.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.